The most important thing is to look at any cybersecurity expenditure or investment as an ongoing operational investment and then squeezing the most effectiveness over the entire lifetime of that system rather than just saying, oh, I've got a problem, I'm going to buy a piece of technology, plug it into my rack in the data center and problem solved.
You're listening to KBCast, the cybersecurity podcast for all executives. Cutting through the jargon and hype to understand the landscape where risk and technology meet. Now, here's your host, Carissa Breen.
Joining me today is Glenn Maiden, Director of Threat Intelligence, FortiGuard Labs, ANZ. And today we're discussing the multi-sector approach to disrupt cybercrime at a global scale. So Glenn, thanks for joining and welcome.
Thank you very much for having me, Carissa. I'm really excited for this conversation.
I'm aware that Fortinet's significant involvement in the development of the Cybercrime Atlas. So maybe for those who are not aware what the Cybercrime Atlas is, talk me through it and what's involved.
Yeah, sure. Going back to about sort of 2019 or 2020, as part of the World Economic Forum partnership against cybercrime, there was a couple of key leaders that were just sort of thinking around, like, what can we do to really impact the cyber criminal ecosystem? So my boss, Derek Menke, who's the global head of FortiGuard Labs, Amy Hogan from Microsoft, Michael Daniel, who's the CEO of the Cyber Threat Alliance, and Tal Goldstein from the World Economic Forum, they all sort of sat back and they're thinking, when we think of some of the prolific threat actors like Reval or Conti or Clop or Black Cat that's sort of been in the news this week, we see the devastation they cause, but when you think about it, who is behind the attacks? You know, who's writing the malware? Who's the affiliates that are conducting the crimes? And, you know, is it 5 people or is it 10 people or is it 1,000 people? So, you know, there is a bit of knowledge about these actors and their support systems, but there is significant gaps. So our understanding is sort of a bit scattered throughout sort of government agencies, law enforcement agencies and industry. Everyone's got a little bit of the puzzle, but it's held by many in many different formats and it's hard to bring that together. So the idea of Atlas is to pull together the experts from government, law enforcement, not-for-profit organizations and industry to build essentially a Rosetta Stone and map out the bad guys that are behind these attacks.
Great word around scattered. People often say the industry is quite fragmented. You've got these little things popping up left, right, and center. So I'm really curious to know, would you say that over the years, people have tried to do something like a cybercrime atlas in the past and it's just sort of failed?
I don't know if failed's the right word, but I definitely think you're right in terms of success. Like obviously the bad guys have really got one up on us. I've got a really broad sort of perspective here. I spent 20 years in government in both sort of the national security role in the national security space and roles in places like the Department of Defense. And then I was the IT security advisor at a non-national organization, the Australian Tax Office. So, and since then I've worked with, you know, defense primes like Lockheed Martin. And the last 6 years I've been working in leading cybersecurity vendors like Fortinet. And a lot of that time I've been working with academia, involved in things like the Cybersecurity Cooperative Research Center, and again, not-for-profits like the World Economic Forum. So I've looked at, you know, the collaboration and the scattered sort of approaches from many angles. But from my perspective, I've seen so much goodwill from all sides to talk and to share. But I 100% agree that there's more alignment.
Yeah, most definitely. I'm then curious to know, because of your experience and your background, why do you think it is so scattered though?
I don't think there's any sort of conspiracy. I just think that we all get really, really buried in our work and we've all got our own missions. You know, for example, a defense prime or the Department of Defense or, you know, academia, everyone's sort of got their own, I guess, drivers, their own priorities, their own sort of KERs, and I guess importantly, their own cultures. So I think it's more just a few impediments in sort of, you know, breaking down some of the barriers between some of these different organizations and trying to sort of unify and get that sort of common goal, which is, you know, to basically break down these bad guys.
What do you think some of the barriers are though?
In a lot of times, or actually in many cases, it's all about building trust. And if you think of government, it's really, really hard from things like probity. So, you know, you can't go out and, you know, in some cases, you can't even go out and have a coffee or something with some government entities because of probity. So there is a few barriers in terms of, you know, getting to know the humans between each side and just making sure that, you know, everyone has a nice, honest conversation about, I guess, you know, some of the impediments, but also, you know, some of the goals that won't always align 100%. So I think if we can sort of remove some of those impediments and have more honest and more sort of straightforward conversations, it'll make a big difference.
So I just want to go back now to the initiative, which, as you've alluded to already, Glenn, it aims to combat cybercrime on a global scale by bringing together leaders from various sectors, including businesses, law enforcement agencies, threat intelligence researchers, etc. So before I get into how does all this work, I ask this because it's kind of like wrangling cats, right? Like, again, I'm all about these initiatives, but then it's like I like to hold people's feet to the fire. Like, we can all talk about this is a great initiative, but then in 12 months, are we still going to be singing from the same hymn book as example?
There is a lot of this. And again, I think it's not due to any ill will or anything like that. It's just really, really hard to find the right button to press. So about 2 years ago, we started with that broad mission of creating this Rosetta Stone. And from there, it was exactly as you say, Carissa. It was, how do we align all these cats that are trying to do the right thing and map out these bad guys? So we needed a common way to do analysis. We needed a common way to capture the information that we was trying to sort of build that knowledge repository with. This is actually a little bit normal than when we talk about sort of threat intelligence. So normally in our threat intelligence world, we're trying to share things like indicators of compromise, the behavior of malware, and attribute that to the bad guys that are actually running these campaigns. But if we're looking at Atlas, we're actually looking at something a little bit more sort of investigative and looking at the humans and the support systems. So we're looking at, who are the bad guys behind it? What's their names, their aliases? What's their addresses? What's their bank accounts? What's their crypto wallet address? What DNS zones have they registered? Who's their social network? Who are they speaking to? Email addresses, all these sort of things to get a bit better picture of who's behind the attacks. And then again, going back to your point before about some of those impediments to sharing, the criminals are really, really good at exploiting sort of some of our, strategic disadvantages. So they quite happily operate in all sorts of different jurisdictions, and they know that sometimes it's really, really hard for law enforcement and sort of other organizations like FortiGuard Labs to share across different areas. So we made a decision right at the start to only use OSINT or open source intelligence to make sure that there's no sort of, closed sources that are going to be problematic to share with our law enforcement partners so they can actually act.
So when you say share across different areas, what do you mean? Can you give an example of what other areas that you're sort of referring to?
We'd start out with a sample of some of these cyber criminal organizations, and we sort of categorized it into four different crime categories. So we looked at the people that are writing malware, the actors that are doing business email compromise operations, card fraudsters, and ransomware operators. So we thought that that was a fairly decent sample. And then from those four categories, we looked at those 13 groups. What we've done from there is then worked closely with our law enforcement partners, namely the CSA over in the UK, the people from Interpol who are based out of Singapore in their cybercrime centre, the FBI over in the US, and we're speaking to the Australian Federal Police down here in Australia. So the idea is we work in terms of building up what you'd call a targeting package that we can then hand over and say, hey, we found these new bad guys doing this new activity. Here you go. This can then form the basis of a new case for you.
So the targeting package meaning, hey, this is what we know about X criminal, like, all the information you sort of gave before. Is that correct?
Yeah. So that's sort of one mission. So the idea is, in ideal scenarios, we'd be handing over a targeting package to Interpol, for example, and just say, hey, through our investigation of, for example, someone like Reval, we found these extra 10 threat actors that are still out on the streets. Here's their names and addresses. Now you can go and, kick down some doors. So that's sort of, really, really good result part A. But what we're trying to do as we get a deeper picture of these criminals and, some of the linkages between them, the idea is through this partnership against cybercrime, it might be actually sort of, something above and beyond just law enforcement. So it might be working with partners and governments somewhere in the world, for example, to implement new legislation, or it might be working with a regulator or a telco to sort of implement a new piece of regulation. But anything that we can do to sort of throttle the cyber criminals themselves and the illicit subsystems that are supporting them.
Do you think this initiative will throttle cyber criminals?
It will absolutely, Carissa, make a difference. And we've already seen that so far. I mean, one particular threat actor, we're not actually sort of publicising who we're chasing after too much, just so we don't potentially tip them off. But there's one quite prolific threat actor that's operating sort of out of Nigeria, and we've found 600 new people associated with this particular organisation that are out there on the streets and conducting fraud and conducting crime. So, this is 600 new people of interest that we're able to provide to the law enforcement authorities that they didn't know before. So, absolutely, this is starting to have promising results only sort of really sort of a couple of years in.
So I want to sort of touch on this a little bit more. So over the years, I've interviewed people who are ex-law enforcement, et cetera, you name it, I've interviewed them. And then some of the sort of challenges that they've sort of expressed is, okay, well, you know, tracking these people down is, one, is hard. But then if they're in a different country and there's no treaties in place, it's hard to prosecute. And if we do prosecute them, it's like probably like a 10% of the crime because it's very hard then to prove. So how does all, I mean, obviously with your background and your experience, do you think that's going to become easier for people to be, you know, held accountable for their actions? Because it is hard, especially when you're dealing with cross borders and someone's in a, you know, a random country, like it's hard to sort of extradite them and bring them back to Australia or wherever to prosecute them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily going to go away. And if you think of some of the most prolific cybercrime groups, you know, they're sitting in countries like Russia or over there in Eastern Europe where, you know, there isn't sort of, you know, treaties or, you know, anywhere we could sort of potentially arrest them in those sort of areas. But I think where Atlas would potentially show some promise is, I guess, the example that I gave before, like even though someone is potentially operating in that area where we might not be able to apprehend them and charge them and put them in jail, we might be able to think of a way of throttling some of their support systems. So whether that's, for example, some bulletproof hosting services where they host their malware or potentially sort of blocking out some of their botnet activities, or even from the financial side, we've actually had PayPal as one of the funding partners of this initiative, along with Banco Santander, Microsoft and ourselves, who, you know, we can potentially sort of throttle them in terms of, you know, how they move their money and launder their money. So there is definitely some things that we can do to sort of squeeze their ecosystem if in the cases where we can't actually arrest these people.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. That makes total sense. So we've sort of touched on it briefly, but it'd be great to get your point of view on maybe some of the outcomes from creating this alliance. So obviously, you know, hopefully a reduction in cybercrime, throttling these bad actors, et cetera. Is there anything else that maybe you can shed some light on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I look at this and just sort of think of so much potential. So we've sort of started off with, as I said before, like biting the elephant one part at a time. So we've started off sort of with some analytical type of activities, which is sort of centered around this Atlas project. But within the partnership, we're doing a whole bunch of other activities, you know, and we're thinking around, well, you know, how can we better, this is just an example, but, you know, how can we better use things like cyber insurance to assist in the fight against cybercrime? How can we better integrate with law enforcement? How can we better use our legal expertise that's sitting in places like World Economic Forum or the, you know, the legal counsel in Microsoft or Fortinet? So how can we sort of use the power of all these partnerships to come up with other initiatives to basically sort of throttle and make the lives of these cyber criminals a little bit more miserable? So realistically, with Atlas, it was sort of the first project in this partnership that sort of taken off, and it was given the green light in Davos at the World Economic Forum annual meeting this year. So to move from prototype through to, you know, fully supported by both the World Economic Forum and the founding partners, you know, some of these other opportunities through just the connectivity of the groups that are involved in this is just almost, you know, limited by our imagination.
Yeah, most definitely. And I guess it's still early days, right? Like, you don't have a crystal ball to have all the answers. And it's not about everyone having all the answers. It's more so just having this discussion to, you know, be made aware of these initiatives that, whether it's you or someone else that's running, this is what's important to me to be able to get that message out so people are across what's happening outside their own sort of echo chamber.
Yeah, yeah. And I know, like, so the FBI, for example, has got some fusion centers sort of over in the US. So we're speaking to people like that. But even if you talk to the AFP, they've got some very, very similar initiatives right here in Australia. So the trick is going to be making sure that we don't sort of reinvent the wheel and overlap our work, but complement the work of some the great work that a lot of these people are doing. So, you know, we're pretty confident that in this case, this is going to be something that's a capability that sort of complements and supports activities that are already happening. So, yeah, we're really, really quite excited that this is going to be sort of a force multiplier type capability.
You said reinvent the wheel. Totally agree. I definitely probably think there are some initiatives, generally speaking, less so what you're talking about, just generally in the industry, that probably we're reinventing the wheel a bit. So I don't know whether you see the same thing, because at the moment I see a lot of these smaller initiatives like popping up again. There's either no longevity in them or they don't like to do industry collaboration. It's just an observation that I've had. Wanted to know what your thoughts were on that.
100%, Carissa. Like, that's obviously sort of a real challenge, especially when you're thinking of industry as broad and as, you know, international as cyber. But one of the things that I was quite excited about in the early days is talking to the FBI. And if you think of organizations like the FBI or the AFP or any of those sort of law enforcement agencies, a lot of the times their personnel are being sort of posted in and posted out. So they might do, you know, a couple of years in a particular cybercrime unit doing cybercrime investigations and cybercrime cases, and then they might be posted out to something else. So when we were talking to the FBI, one of the real advantages that we've got is if you imagine someone that's chasing down a, you know, a really well-known entity like Reval, you're 100% right. Like there's probably 100 people that are doing analysis on Reval right now. But, you know, again, you talk to the law enforcement agency and they say, well, you know, we'll get a new officer in that is investigating a case against Reval where they've maybe done a ransomware attack against a victim in their jurisdiction. We can actually hand them that targeting package that we've already, where we've already done the work. And that might save that investigator a month or 2 months worth of work to get up to speed. So, you know, Wallace, certainly at risk of reinventing the wheel a little bit, if we can manage to sort of, you know, get our processes and procedures and you know, the rest of our systems in play, we can really, really provide a value to people like law enforcement where they do have sort of some of those challenges like the jurisdictions and the attrition of personnel.
Okay, I want to slightly switch gears for a moment and talk about maybe the chatter in the industry of that alignment piece, because this is really important because, again, there's a lot of people saying, oh, we need more alignment. I had a phone call yesterday with a friend of mine in Melbourne and we're talking about even alignment with vendor to vendor. I just think that people say this, but then they're not really talking to one another. And it's kind of like, it's like people don't want to share as much. I find it really prominent in this country. I don't know why it is, but it's like everyone doesn't want to share or people don't want to give up information. It's almost like people think it's a zero-sum game. Well, if I share with you, Glenn, then you win and I lose. I know that sounds like a very broad sort of accusation, but I mean, like, I speak to a number of people in this country all over the world, and it's something that I'm just really hearing. But then again, it's just, I don't want to say lip service, but it's just more like, okay, let's do the alignment. And then like nothing sort of happens. And again, I'm a rubber to the road type of person. I like there to see movement. I like things to change and move the needle, if you want to call it that. But I haven't quite seen it.
There's absolutely challenges. We're a founding member of the Cyber Threat Alliance, which is sort of, I guess, a global threat sharing organization, not for profit. And that's got membership between, you know, some of our most competitors. You know, so if you think of, you know, some of the people that are involved in that, we've got Microsoft, we've got McAfee, we've got Cisco, we've got, so all of these other organizations that we compete, you know, quite strongly within the market. We share every single day with all these other members of the Cyber Threat Alliance. And there's actually sort of well over 200, and this is context-enabled threat sharing. So this isn't us just sort of, you know, firing across an IP address or something like that. It's like, we've seen this activity, you know, here you go, import that into your system. So, you know, we share with goodwill every single day with some of these competitors through things like the Cyber Threat Alliance. And in terms of locally here in Australia, I'm really, really impressed with the Australian Cybersecurity Centre CETA system, Cyber Threat Information Sharing System. So Fortinet has signed up to this CETA system, and there's a whole bunch of other cybersecurity vendors as well as critical infrastructure providers and, you know, financial institutions, all of us sharing things like sightings every single day. So, you know, while there's absolutely room for improvement, there is definitely sort of a lot of goodwill out there, and there is a lot happening behind the scenes.
But what about when you sort of filter down to just, you know, people working in more the private sector? There's like a lot of these like groups and things like that and having alignment. What are your thoughts on that?
From a private sector perspective, I mean, you know, we're quite happily will share threat information because, you know, it's that old metaphor of the rising tide raises all boats. So, you know, it's not in Fortinet's advantage or interest to see, you know, one of our customers get exploited or even one of our competitors' customers get exploited. Like, you know, that's really, really bad for the industry. It's bad for all of us. So, you know, there is actually a fair bit of work to sort of, you know, share threat information because it makes all of our systems and all of our protections, you know, that much more richer and that much more effective.
That I agree with. I just think there are potentially other vendors out there that what you're saying makes sense. I just don't know. I think it's more about their own interests than doing the good of the overall vision. I've noticed that a bit.
Well, look, sometimes vendors can actually get a bit of a bad rap. And I think a lot of that case is, or a lot of that sort of rap would be based on sort of, you know, from the I guess, on the sales side of the market. But at the end of the day, any vendor that, or any organization for that matter, that doesn't act with the best interest of the customer at heart or the best interest of the industry at heart, you know, they're not going to have that longevity. So, you know, I know certainly in my case and in all my careers, in all the organizations that I've worked through in my career, it's all about the outcome and it's all about sort of doing the right thing by the customer. So, you know, one thing, I'm based here in Canberra and it's a really, really small cybersecurity market. So I know most of the CISOs across government. I know most of the cybersecurity vendors. I know most of the partners. I know most of the integrators. And, you know, bad behavior does happen. I've seen it happen a couple of times, but people have got a reasonably long memory because it's such a small market. So, you know, the few bad apples in the industry don't really last that long.
And I think it's important to have this discussion. And it's more so, yeah, like I said, it's just a discussion to hear your point of view, because like you said, it's going back to having the right integrity, doing right by the customer. It's just sometimes I just don't know whether there are certain organizations out there that aren't focused. They lose focus of that. It comes about the sales and the this and the that, and I don't want my competitor to have market share or whatever it is. It absolutely is that. But it's more so maybe from your point of view of being a leader, how would you sort of get someone to be focused on the end goal of, hey, like it doesn't really matter at the end of the day if like competitor wins a deal or a tender or whatever it is. It is about protecting Australia, national security, our customers, our people. Sometimes I think people lose sight of that, if I'm honest.
I think so. I don't know that it's necessarily a deliberate thing, but one of the things that I've seen is, you know, probably gaps in all sides. So, you know, it's no secret private organizations need to make a profit. I mean, it's no secret, and that's not a bad thing. Like, you don't want any organization to be struggling in any way. You want them to be healthy, you want to be prospering. And an organization like Fortinet, you want us to be prosperous, because we pour, you know, such a huge percentage of any money that we make back into the R&D to make sort of some of these bleeding edge security solutions that we have to sort of, you know, we have to keep bringing to the market because the threat environment changes so much. But I think one of the things, at least in my experience, that's a problem is cyber capability, regardless of vendor, regardless of anyone. So often it's integrated as a project and it's seen as almost like a capital expense. So, you know, hey, I've got a problem. I'm going to go and buy a new firewall, or I'm going to go and buy a new email filter, or whatever the case may be. I'll plug it in and, you know, that's it, problem solved. But the reality is cyber is really sort of, you know, more of an ongoing sort of support capability. So anyone that buys any cyber solution that doesn't provide the care and feeding for it, and this is again goes back to one of the key, I guess, struggles in the market in terms of not having enough good sort of skilled trained people, any cyber solution is going to sort of start to lose effectiveness over time. So the most important thing is to look at any cybersecurity expenditure or investment as an ongoing operational investment and then squeezing the most effectiveness over the entire lifetime of that system, rather than just saying, oh, I've got a problem, I'm going to buy a piece of technology, plug it into my rack in the data center and problem solved.
Do you think that's still a very dominant thought process of people thinking, oh, well, I'll just plug and play and then I never squeeze the most out of it a lot? Or someone buys a piece of software and then they leave the company and we don't even know it was in there? And I mean, there's all these sort of scenarios that go on, right? So what would be your approach to ensuring that you are getting, you know, squeezing the most juice out of everything?
I think, you know, a lot of organizations, as I say, they'll have a bit of a compliance approach. So, you know, we need legislation, or the policy says that I need to have one of these security solutions. I'll buy, you know, solution X, plug it in, and then away we go, without actually fully understanding how it fits into their business. And again, going back to your point, how does it actually fit into some of their operational constraints? So it's no good buying a capability, for example, like data loss and prevention, or, you know, some sort of role-based access product, if you haven't actually got the investment within the organization to understand, you know, how that actually will protect your specific organization. So, and then it comes down to having the humans in there that are able to understand what the technical capability is, but more importantly, you know, what's the assets and the systems and the people that we need to protect within that organization, and how do we sort of, you know, align those two things? So, you know, in terms of how do you do it, what we try and do in Fortinet is we try and sort of, you know, advise customers to buy some services along with any particular technical product. You know, there is definitely some really, really mature customers out there that have got some of the smartest and best people in there, but, you know, they're probably not the majority. The majority probably do suffer from, you know, a skills gap. So, you know, and unfortunately, you just have to sort of, you know, import some of those skills in. But that's the only way that you can really maximize your security investment and really get those results to protect your organization.
So when you say skills gap, do you mean more so like a comprehensive understanding about cybersecurity, how it all works, how you can implement it, all of those types of things?
Yeah, it's 100%. But also, if you think of every organization, this is where, I mean, this is the classic sort of gap between IT and the business. But a cybersecurity expert is going to go into, for example, you know, where I worked in the Australian Tax Office. So, you know, I'd look at it and I'd say, well, oh, the most important thing is our mainframe, or the most important thing is our, you know, our data lakes or our SQL server, whatever the case may be, you know, that's the most important thing to me. But that's not actually the case. You know, if you go and actually talk to the business, they'll say, well, the most important thing is this investigation or, you know, this repository or this file or whatever. So it's really, really important for the businesses that are trying to sort of protect their most critical assets to work with the technical experts to make sure that we're protecting the right things. And, you know, even from a financial perspective, it makes no sense to go and throw a whole bunch of technology at an organization to protect things that aren't that important. You really need to work out what is possible to, that's not going to be that much of an impact if something bad does happen. But, you know, the stuff that is absolutely the crown jewels, that's where you need to focus your spending. So that's something that you can't necessarily make the determination alone as a cybersecurity person. You have to work closely with the actual business.
Yeah, look, I totally hear what you're saying. I think the answer is, one, it's hard. And there's no, like, this is the way you've got to do it. It's going to depend on each organization, each person. I think we're closing that gap, but again, it's still going to take time. And unfortunately, these things are not flick of a switch in terms of we can solve that problem immediately, unfortunately, but time will tell. So then maybe I'd just like to refocus now the discussion around, well, what do you sort of see from your perspective, Glenn, with everything we discussed today, with the involvement with the Cybercrime Atlas, the World Economic Forum Center for Cybersecurity, that Fortinet's powering. So what do you sort of see then longer term around the unification from public, you know, and private sectors, and then organizations like globally? Like, what are your thoughts? And again, there's no right or wrong answer. It's just more so like, what do you think?
Before we spoke, I was actually thinking about this and some of the sharing that I mentioned before, whether it's sort of, you know, the ACSC or things like the Cyber Threat Alliance. It's all fantastic. And, you know, it is actually making a difference. But you think, well, how can we better connect? And this goes back to, again, some of your valid criticisms of the dysfunction in the industry. So how can we better connect, you know, all the different elements of the industry? And I was sort of thinking of the Russian invasion of Ukraine. So, you know, not only has there been military targets, there's been government targets, there's been civilian targets, there's been critical infrastructure targets. So, you know, no longer, if there's a really, really big cyber event, is it just going to be sort of focused on some of those traditional military and government targets. You know, civilians are now fair game. So if we think in Australia of our critical infrastructure sector, so, you know, whether it's mining or whether it's energy generation or whether it's transport or manufacturing or telco, you name it, whatever it is, it's no longer just sort of, you know, a simple, well, we need to protect this army or air force base. It's a really, really huge expanded attack surface. And there's a whole bunch of defenders in there that aren't necessarily talking to each other, as you mentioned before. So it could be, you know, someone out in a mine out in Western Australia that's in charge of a really, really complex piece of operation technology. So what I was sort of thinking is, you know, the next step is how do we actually connect some of these humans into groups where they can sort of discuss and be connected to the relevant information and relevant expertise. So I was thinking potentially even something like a social network type system where you can connect the stakeholders and then align them into sort of the groups of interest. And similar to what they've done in the Home Affairs critical infrastructure legislation, where all the critical infrastructure entities have to have an asset register of all their critical infrastructure. You know, we build an asset register of the defenders, people like myself. I'm a threat intelligence analyst, you know, someone that's running the security operations center out at one of the mines. All those sort of people, if we can have an asset register of them and then connect them on, you know, some sort of focused version of, you know, Facebook or something like that, you know, I think that's actually the next step. And then from there, you can think about doing exercises and simulations and things like that to identify gaps.
Definitely. So, okay, I want to get into this a little bit more. Who do you think should own that then? I'm reluctant to say government, if I'm honest, because I just see there's a lot of resistance towards when government owns some of these initiatives. And I say this with all due respect, but it's more so around, well, you know, some of these government individuals really out of touch with what's happening in the private sector as well. So I've often found that their network isn't as strong with private and public, you know, everything we've gone on about today. So I'm curious then to know who would own an initiative like that. But then that goes back to, well, if that person's owning it, does that mean they're leading it? And then why should they lead it? It's then all these discussions come up for debate.
I mean, I think that's right. This is one of the real advantages, though, of these sort of public and private partnerships. So if you think of a lot of people, and again, I've worked in government for 20 years, so you do tend to get in your own echo chamber, whether you're in the government or whether I'm even in Fortinet. You know, I'm not necessarily up to the latest government policies or something like that. I'm definitely not an expertise in those. You see things like the, you know, security of critical infrastructure, but I'm definitely not an expert. So this is where sort of some of these public-private partnerships really bring in the, you know, the advantages of all these different perspectives, and hopefully sort of don't bring in some of the disadvantages. So if you think of, you know, a private organization like Fortinet, I've got a global network of, you know, millions upon tens of millions worth of sensors. So I'm actually looking every single day at what the bad guys are up to in every single vertical, in every single sort of, you know, country on the planet. So, you know, that's a perspective that I can bring to the table. And then if you look at someone like, you know, the ACSC, you know, they know what they need to protect inside government. And then if you think of something like the, you know, CSISAC, the critical infrastructure SAC that they've just established up at the Sunshine Coast, you know, they know, you know, some of the critical infrastructure partners that they're working with, you know, some of the assets that they need to protect, some of the vulnerabilities. So you start to smash all that together, then you really do have something that's more than the sum of its parts. And to answer your question, who owns that? I think it's something like a not-for-profit. So I was involved in the Cybersecurity Collaborative Research Center, as I said before. That was government, that was industry like myself, and that was academia all coming together to try and stimulate, you know, Australia as one of the leading cybersecurity countries in the world. And that was very, very effective. Everyone had a mission, everyone had outcomes in mind. And Rachel Falk did a magic job in sort of pulling together some really, really disparate stakeholders. So I think potentially some sort of a not-for-profit where, you know, people like myself can be involved, the government can be involved, academia can be involved, and the critical infrastructure entities with a, you know, obviously there's going to need to be like rules of engagement and all those sort of things in terms of, you know, how it's set up and the board behind it. But I think, you know, a not-for-profit similar to, I don't know, NBN is probably where that would best sit.
Yeah, look, I think these are, you know, this is a good discussion. I think, again, like there's, we don't have all the answers. It's just more so exploring what you're sort of seeing, how we can move the needle as a collective in the industry. I do agree with you. I think I was at a CISO dinner the other night and they were sort of expressing like, hey, it's about network, like it's networking. Like you think if you're a CISO, you'd have this massive network, but they're like, hey, like sometimes we kind of don't. So I can see where you're coming from and where the gaps are. And again, it's not about us solving it on this interview. It's just more so having that discussion and hopefully, you know, planting the seeds to further the industry as a whole. So is there anything specific, Glenn, you'd like to leave our audience with today?
I think I mentioned before, but I do think there's a lot of goodwill. So whether it's government or whether it's vendors like Fortinet or whether it's managed security service providers, I don't think anyone necessarily wants to do the wrong thing. I think, you know, all of us want to see success. And, you know, when you see some of these impactful breaches, you know, that hurts us all. So I think there's a lot of goodwill, but I think the closing thoughts are, you know, we just really need to break down sort of some of these barriers in terms of, you know, process and culture between some of these very, very sort of different organizations. Work out how we can work together because, you know, we're running out of time that, you know, the criminals and some of these state-sponsored actors are getting better and they actually are aligning between academia and government and the private sector. So, you know, they're doing it really, really well. So, you know, we really need to sort of, you know, start to get a little bit of a sense of urgency so we can sort of start to work together better to defend Australia and national interests.
Yeah, most definitely. So I really appreciate your thoughts, your insights, your sentiments today, Glenn, because again, it's just about having these discussions and hopefully, you know, there's some insight that people can take away from today's interview. So thanks so much for your time and thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Carissa. It's been a really interesting discussion. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you found today's episode useful and you took away a few key points. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get our latest episodes.
This podcast is brought to you by MercSec, the specialists in security, search, and recruitment solutions. Visit MercSec.com to connect today.
If you'd like to find out how KBI can help grow your cyber business, then please head over to kbi.digital.
This podcast was brought to you by KBI.media, the voice of cyber.